Hey, everybody, the 2024 Spoilie Awards went live as of March 10th.
That's right, and if you want to see our beautiful faces, you can see it on YouTube. Check out the link in the description of this episode.
Or you can go and listen to it right now on whatever you're listening on.
Made me puke. Why?
But
how?
What?
Worst movie, no matter what.
Oh, well, hold on now. They're way better candidates. There's
so many.
Bad casting. Scenes were abruptly cut. Directing. Don't quit your day job. Bad, 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 bad movie.
Oh my gosh.
But his day job is directing.
Can we get arrested for punching someone?
Yes, assault. Probably, but
that
not
is,
this person.
That is assault.
That was a 1-star review from IMDb. Hello, and welcome to Spoilers Intended, a podcast about series and films. I'm Ryan, joined as always by Andrew.
Greetings.
And Steven.
Can you imagine that you're like in court after punching this dude? You're just like, Your Honor, here's a printout of his 1-star reviews on IMDb. And the guy's like, tell you what, let me get down and get this robe off. I want to hit him too.
No, he just hauls off and bow, like right in the witness stand. Just hits him.
He just throws his gavel.
Yeah. Kablow, gavel, gavel, gavel. And
like
in this episode,
those turtles from Mario,
the Hammer Brothers.
That's not the sound gavels make.
That's a 30 Rock reference where Liz Lemon goes to court and the judge lost his gavel and he goes gavel, 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 and everybody looks at him and he goes, "Sorry, I lost my gavel this morning."
I got it.
But thank you, Andrew.
Yeah,
like two other people listening to it.
Oh man,
what? That's implying that a lot of people haven't watched 30 Rock, which you should.
I feel like it's an old show now.
It is an old show now because you're old, but it was very popular.
All these hip Gen Z kids that listen to our podcast are like, whatever, old man. That's a boomer show. It's a great show.
Are they Shaggy? Is it Gen Z Shaggy?
It's both.
Whatever, old man.
Gen Z's way into Scooby-Doo. Trust me, guys. I'm with
they
the teens.
All are. Who knows?
Who knows, yeah. Okay, if you can't tell, obviously we're reviewing the holdovers. Starring Paul Giamatti and directed by Alexander Payne.
Really? There's no other starring people in this film?
I mean, there's a bunch of other people, but that Paul Giamatti's the biggest actor, I'd say, by far.
He is the big name.
I mean, sure.
I'm going to do the plot summary in the whole cast.
I'm going to do the plot summary in the whole cast.
The backseat podcasters over here.
No, I'm pretty sure we're front seat.
We're all three in the front seat, and you're going to grab the wheel, and I'm like, I'm driving here. All right, so a cranky history teacher, Andrew Knuckles, at a remote prep school is forced to remain on campus over the holidays with a grieving cook and a troubled student who has no place to go.
I would be a pretty grouchy history teacher.
So you should, you should have done
ancient history
grouchy history teacher is yourself, and you're stuck on campus with us.
Oh, that is.
Oh, God, no, please. Yes, no.
I'm the grouchy teacher, and you sweat hogs are in the back of the
sweat
class.
Hogs. That's another old reference.
That was from Welcome Back, Cotter.
It was.
I've actually never seen Welcome Back,
of course you haven't. It's from the 70s, Andrew.
From the 70s?
I barely saw it in reruns. I'm old,
right? From the 70s, but not really.
It is.
I barely know that reference.
Steven, got it? My fellow old got it. All right. So this movie was released October 27th, 2023, theatrically. It was directed by Alexander Payne, who you probably know from Sideways, that also starred Paul Giamatti and Thomas Hayden Church. That was the wine movie. I don't know if you remember that.
No.
It's a good movie. It came out 04?
Yeah, 04, 05, early 2000s.
Yeah. It's good film.
It's pretty good, yeah. It's similar to this in some ways. Like, it's a character
drama. Character
drama. He did Election, and then he did Nebraska, and there's a bunch of other stuff.
I can't say I've seen any of those.
I haven't seen Election or Nebraska. I'm aware.
I haven't even heard of these titles, so.
You might, if you saw a trailer, be like, oh, yeah, that
probably,
movie.
Yeah.
But you probably didn't, watch these, obviously.
Wow.
Well, you just said you didn't.
So. I don't know.
It felt like a safe bet.
I just felt some slight in there.
Well, I've only seen Sideways. I haven't seen Election or Nebraska, but I've heard they're both good. Mm-hmm. It's just, put it in the pile of things I haven't seen yet.
There's a lot of media.
It's a big problem.
Right. It's a big, big world, everybody. written by David Hemmingson, who this is his first feature film.
Was this adapted from anything?
No.
Okay, just straight out.
Yeah.
All right.
He's done lots of TV. He did like American Dad episodes, How I Met Your Mother, Hercules, the Disney TV show back in the day. So he's basically done a lot of television and then this.
Kevin Sorbo?
No, the Disney with the animated.
Oh, gotcha.
The animated TV show version of
the TV show of the film.
Kevin Sorbo's like, I don't know any David Hemmingson. Me and my best friend Xena don't remember him at all. Okay, too many references to old stuff in this. We're off to a terrible start.
I don't know. I feel that it's actually pretty on point.
I do too.
It is actually on brand for a film that is set in the 1970s.
Yeah. If you watch this movie
from the 70s,
dude, everything about that intro, like when the intro is going, I was like, oh man, this feels great.
So much trivia.
I am on all. There's some really fun, like, just like if you're familiar with like movie history.
Oh yeah,
like there's some fun stuff.
Well, at the front, that you got the copy of the MCM XII. It's like if you look, it's the year 1970.
Yeah, it's done as if it was filmed.
Well, then, even then, like because this was before they changed the rules to where you had to have pretty much the full credits before.
Oh yeah,
the movie, and they still did that.
They did it.
It's great.
And then they also they referenced the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, before now it's just the MPA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, so everything they did was intentional. Yeah. That. We'll get to that later.
Give us a synopsis.
Well, so, no,
you already did. Give us a synopsis.
We're past that. We're on to the music. Mark Orton did the music. This movie is what he's done and nothing else I've ever heard of. I looked through his entire IMDb and I was like, I don't know.
Well, now to be fair, there's a lot of soundtracks in here.
There is.
Yeah. So it's like that does kind of lift up a lot of like what the music is. And the music's really good.
Yeah.
And the background tracks are like fantastic.
Like the selections for the music they play is great. Yes. The background stuff is great. Like, the sound's great.
Yeah. So starring in this movie, we got Paul Giamatti. We have Dominic Sessa, Sessa. It's S-E-S-S-A.
He's like brand new.
He's the kid. This is his first
fresh
role.
Yeah.
He's done some theater before this, but this is his first.
He literally did theater at Deerfield Academy, which as far as I know, that's like a high school, basically.
It is. And it's like some of the, it's they didn't shoot at Deerfield.
They shot some of it there.
Some of it, but they, the founding date, there's something about this fictional school that tied together.
They say it was founded the same year that I think Deerfield
was. Yeah. And then Divine Joy Randolph is in this also. That's your big three. Box office was $20 million domestic, $19 million international, so like $39 million total.
Mm-hmm.
Budget, I could only find one source, and it wasn't what I would call a 100%
reputable.
But pop-up
allegedly, they are reporting $200,000.
There is no way.
No way.
Now, I will say, in their defense, they didn't shoot anything on a soundstage.
Nope.
Everything was shot on location.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can definitely tell.
Yeah. And like, it's not like they have to do, like, what, a bunch of VFX? But fix it in post, you know?
Well, and really, Paul Giamatti's the only bigger actor that,
And it could have been a labor of love for him.
Could have been.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. I saw that on that website.
That still feels unrealistic.
I was like, that's ridiculous.
Does that actually pay to put everybody up in a hotel for 3 weeks?
When you say there's no VFX shots, there are definitely VFX shots when they go into Boston.
There are.
Oh, but it's not like to make it like
third act time for a CGI slugfest.
No, So to me,
destroy Boston.
Just the VFX required to make it look like older Boston is probably more than $200,000.
Probably.
Right?
You would think.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know.
So anyways, take that with a huge grain of salt. I looked at like several other Wikipedia, a bunch of different articles,
we can postulate definitive. Anywhere between 200,000 to 5 million.
Sure. I think we
somewhere around there.
Why'd you cap it at 5? Why not 50?
Well, no, because 50 is too much.
I mean, you buffoon. That's way too
much. Now the movie is 100.
Okay, so Steven, you look up that. Andrew, what's your overall thoughts?
So going into this, like, I remember seeing, like, the trailers for it in theaters back in, you know, November, I guess.
Well, it came out in October, so probably
earlier September. Than that, yes. Yeah. Just sometime.
Yeah.
And,
oh, man.
Continue.
Oh, sorry. Well, no, this is not continue. This is me interrupting. So the first thing that pops up is the $200K that you found.
Yeah.
The very next article talks about that it was produced on a reported budget around $70
million. 70? That feels too high.
That feels way too high.
It does feel high. I'm just saying, like, and while this is a little bit over,
that could be marketing in that, but even then, 70 million is a lot.
That is quite a bit for this movie.
I don't know.
Not to sidetrack, but
anywhere between 200,000 and 70 million.
Somewhere in that range, this movie fell. Andrew, your overall thoughts.
Yeah. So going into this, whenever I saw the trailers, I was like, ooh, this looks like a lot of fun because clearly like they're trying to make it look like it's shot in the 1970s. They definitely have the feel for how the trailers were constructed back then.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a really big selling point of the film because it's a very nostalgic film, especially if you have watched films even from that era or 1980s or whatever.
Yeah.
It has very much kind of like the Breakfast Club style of like filming and character drama that I think is what really made this movie shine. And the music was really good. The cinematography was fantastic. Paul Giamatti did a wonderful job.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Like just, and I'm not, I can't really think of a lot of other films I've seen him in specifically to watch him.
Oh yeah.
But like, he's in a lot of stuff because I recognized him.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of movies.
He's got a distinctive name and a distinctive face.
He's been a side character in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He was in Sideways, which was probably one of the first things he had that was like a bigger movie that featured him as like him and Thomas Hayden Church were like the two main guys.
But yeah, I feel that I see him a lot in stuff, or maybe I'm just like Mandala effect, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
He did a wonderful job in this, and the core cast of like supporting characters, particularly the younger kid.
Angus?
Dominic.
Angus.
Oh, yeah,
Dominic Angus. Sessa, Angus. Mr. Tully.
Just did a wonderful job.
Tully. I feel more correct.
Yeah. But this.
Angus Tully, yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, this being his like first movie just was like incredibly impressive.
To dip into a little bit of trivia, like the Alexander Payne didn't really want to go with Dominic, and they had like other kids, and Paul Giamatti basically went to bat and was like, this kid is like. He's got it. So like, I think they made a huge call with going with Dominic Sessa or Sessa.
But yeah, I thought the movie was really, really good. It's a fantastic little character drama. Now I'm not going to say you're going to have like the emotional pangs that something like Good Will Hunting kind of elicits.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has the highs or the lows.
Yeah. It's very much one of those where like the baseline bar is very high, but it doesn't hit the highs of like a Good Will Hunting or, I don't know.
What's the other Robin Williams one? Dead Poets Society?
Yeah. Dead Poets Society. Yeah. You know, like those kind of films that are like really kind of like school based.
This is based set in schools. Yeah. I was trying to call something else. Like,
No, because educational. There we go.
Well, as it kicks off, it has that kind of vibe of like,
it does.
Here's a grumpy teacher. Here's a troubled teen. They're going to, you know, you kind of see where the story's going. Now, where the twists and turns that happen along the way, I didn't see a lot of that coming.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and so when we're recording this right now, the Oscars have not happened yet. So this movie was nominated for Best Picture and I think maybe a couple other things here and there.
I can look it up real quick.
What's her name? Mary is up for a supporting role, I believe.
Oh, she was great, too.
Yeah, she was great, yeah.
But so just... all of our opinions whenever we're talking about this are based before the Oscars happen. So if, you know, we say something that's completely off base.
Or if we're like, oh, you know, they were nominated and it turns out they won. Well,
that could happen.
So it's been nominated for Best Picture. It's been nominated for Best Actor for Paul Giamatti. Best Actress in a Supporting Role for Devine. I'm not sure how she says her name. And then, let's see, it's been nominated for... oh, that's the only Academy Awards. There's some BAFTAs and
some like technicals or anything like that.
Let me keep
I do know the look up the BAFTAs because they did win a bunch of awards for the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
So when we're recording this before the Oscars, so don't get mad at us if our opinions are wrong or completely invalidated by
if
the
we're
time.
Like, I don't think it'll win Best Picture, well, then it's like,
no, I was
totally won Best Picture.
So this is kind of where I was going is I think this is going to be a bit of a hot take. Is I don't think this movie should be in the running for Best Picture. Everything else it absolutely deserves, but I don't think this, like, it didn't hit the highs that I was expecting for a Best Picture.
It's grandiose enough.
Yeah.
It's such a small...
No, and it's a phenomenal film.
It's really, like, the scope that it's within, it's phenomenal. I just don't know if it's a grand enough scope.
I think that's kind of where...
It's such a small... I mean, it covers 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, you know, like whenever I think of like
tight scale,
Best Picture character drama, I think of Good Will Hunting. That is kind of like where my mind goes of like the caliber of film that I'm expecting.
Yeah.
Going into
I hope it turns out Good Will Hunting didn't win.
No, I don't think it did.
It probably did. But you're talking about the emotional,
just the emotional
kind of
weight,
payoff.
Yeah. That you kind of get, and this one didn't have it. It still had some good emotional moments, but not in the sense of like waterworks.
I teared up a couple times in this movie, but I would describe the the emotional stakes of this plot is more subtle. It's more of a very,
very
like,
nuanced,
like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay, this one kid's like, you know, coming of age as this other dude's having like a mid to late life crisis.
It's a yeah. look at three people at different stages in their lives yeah. and mm-hmm. just kind of the effects they each have on each other while they're in each other's orbit.
Yeah, well, and
but it never fully snaps into the found family.
Yeah,
type
it doesn't.
Thing.
It doesn't lock into one archetype or another. Really.
No, it does. Yeah, and like, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think this movie was absolutely phenomenal. I just don't think it hits that heights of what I expect from like a best picture.
I think so, ultimately it's very nuanced. It just, but because it doesn't pick one lane and just, you know, go 100 miles an hour in that lane, it mm-hmm. doesn't ramp off into
exactly,
that. So it
yeah.
just kind of meanders like life does, right? Mm-hmm.
So the BAFTAs, this movie won for Best Supporting Actress for Divine Joy Randolph mm-hmm. and then Best Casting.
Okay.
Which I guess I mean, is a BAFTA award.
I mean, if you cast the best supporting actress, yeah, I mean, like, you're
you
doing
gotta win
good.
It, right?
Yeah. I mean. But yeah, so, you know, obviously, like, by the time you're listening to this, they could have already won best picture and, you know, we're just talking
you
now.
Could
yeah.
be wrong.
You know, it's whatever. Yeah. 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 It could be wrong.
yeah. See, I'm gonna take the opposite tack. So this won best picture. So they've already.
See, Steven says, I guarantee
we're gonna hedge our bets here.
One of us will be right.
Put it all on black, put half on black and half on red. How can you lose?
And I'll say it might win. It's maybe. Well,
now, obviously, we haven't seen every other movie that's up no. for Best yeah. Picture right now. We just there's not enough time.
This was the film that we all looked at when we looked at the list. We said, "Hey, we're gonna do something. Let's do something that's nominated for Oscars. Yeah. It's got a lot of buzz."
Yeah.
And this was one that we all three of us were like, "This looks appealing."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, well, let's do it. You yeah. know.
What did you think, Steven?
So one, I will say this. I understand where it's getting. Kind of like Oscar buzz.
Absolutely.
This has definitely felt like that type of film.
Mm-hmm.
I will say from what I had seen of the trailers just before other films, et cetera, when we were talking about this film, we're like, yeah, it was nominated for Best Picture. Like in the back of my mind, I was thinking about the trailer. And I was like, the trailer just feels like hijinks. How is this nominated? And then as the movie's going, oh, okay, this is why it's not. Oh, yeah. yeah okay. This is yeah. this is way more serious than I thought it was going
yeah.
to be.
Yeah.
It was good. I enjoyed it quite a lot, both for... You know, the stylings, like the mm-hmm. way that they really encapsulated that era.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, for any of you who decide to, you know, stream this at home, I put mine on and it was running and like the opening credits ran. I was like, oh man, this is like dead on for that kind of era. And I was looking at the screen. And I was like, this doesn't feel like the film simulation. I was like, you know what? Bring up my settings. I bet motion smoothing turned itself on at some point. Yeah, it did. Turn that sucker off, and it feels way better.
A pro tip for everyone at home with
turn off motion smoothing forever.
Well, no. So the problem you have with a lot of modern TVs is motion smoothing is on a per input per app basis.
Exactly. Yeah.
So like I had to turn off motion smoothing on every single mm-hmm. app that I download. But yes,
he spent 6 hours one day doing it.
It was probably 5.
Yeah. And then he went and he's like, I'm gonna watch this. Story. I was like, no, I missed one. No.
No. The worst though is you download a new app.
As he burns his house down.
It's unsalvageable,
get
honey.
Get the gasoline out of the garage.
Hand me more matches, I said.
Can't fix this one.
So I loved this movie. I thought it was really good. I agree with you, though, Andrew, that I don't think that it should... I don't mind it being nominated,
no,
but I don't think it'll win
I don't think it'll win.
It,
just,
yeah. it spent... And again, not as a bad thing, but it spent so much time kind of exploring all three... stages of life, essentially, mm-hmm.
yeah,
that it didn't really ever lock onto one
well,
individual and like hammer that down and say mm-hmm. this is the main character, these are the support, like calling Paul Giamatti the main character is believable but also not believable
yeah.
in a way, like this is three yeah, supporting cause actors
yeah it's three supporting actors or actors supporting each other
right yeah, yeah. It's very much so acting by committee here kind of mm-hmm. maneuver
yeah.
or storytelling by committee, so it just doesn't ever pick one of those lanes well, and really like hammer down on the emotions on you. On
so we can even just go back 1 year at this point and look mm-hmm. at Everything Everywhere All at Once
yeah.
winning Best Picture. And then we, if you try and compare just the emotional stakes and the emotional weight that each of these films had,
yeah,
it's just a different,
it's not close. Yeah.
It's not close in that sense. And I don't think no. that you don't need to compare it that way. It's just,
yeah.
it's one of those where
it's kind of apples and oranges.
It is.
Cause it's approaching like relationships
and
emotions and loss in a different way entirely.
Yeah.
Well, it's also there's far more at stake in these relationships. Like the relationships that we have here in at what is it, Barton Academy?
Yeah, Barton. Yeah.
Is they're transient, right? They're only going to happen for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know,
kids graduate, whatever. Other like you, people just move on. It's the reality of life. People move on.
Yeah. So the one thing I'll absolutely say too is I loved the witty banter, or not even banter. It's just like the dialogue that happens between Angus and Walleye. Paul.
His
name is Paul.
That throws me every time I think about it.
Paul Hunnam.
Dean was like, so, you know, Paul. And I was like, wait, hold on. This is what they do for actors who can't figure out what their name's supposed to be. I know Giamatti's better than this.
Yeah. But yeah, so between Angus and Paul, the dialogue that they have is so witty and snappy.
Yeah,
so
good. Well, that's why I was surprised that the writer, this is his first film, really, so he's only done TV, because I was like, man, and because... Also, it's not just snappy between the two of them, and you get the whole, like, the antagonistic relationship at the front, and then, like, when they kind of begrudgingly start to like each other. But it's the believability of their words, too.
Yes. Yeah, like, they're very real.
Yeah, like, it feels like these characters feel real. They feel like they could be somebody. But yeah, so I thought it was great. I loved the just the aesthetics and the lengths that they went to in the production to make it look like it was
the look and feel was shot with film. Yeah, so good. But.
Yeah, so the Alexander Payne, the director, his whole thing was, he said, when you look at movies like Boogie Nights and, you know, a lot of other movies that are modern movies set in the 70s, he goes, they get the sets right, they get the outfits right, they get the cars right. He goes, but they use modern movie techniques.
Like perfect movie
and
techniques.
So he was like, we shot mostly on tripods. We did those long, like 2 to 3 second dissolves.
Oh, which, I was actually about to bring that up. There was like a 4 or 5 second transfer dissolve. And I'm like, what is happening? Yeah.
And so he's like, that's just not popular now. But when you look back at like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and like some other Jack Nicholson movies of that early 70s, like The Shining, and there's one other one that he used as a specific reference that I've never seen. But Jack Nicholson plays like a sailor, like a service member. But they showed an example of it. And it's like, it's got that long cross dissolve. But I loved them. I was eating them up. I was like, this is great. Because it felt like they also added I can't think of the technical term for it, the gate warping, where like in the film gate, the, you know, like you see the text kind of bounces and like the screen, they did that a little bit on some jitter shots. And I was like, I love this. I'm the nerd for that kind of stuff.
It felt like a time capsule.
It did.
In a sense of almost like, oh, we unearthed this pristine film that was made back in the 70s.
Right.
And you watch it, you're like, man, this could be a film made in the 70s.
Well, that was his thing was he was like, I wanted it to feel like this was a lost movie that someone made in 1970, and then they just found the footage.
The Blair Witch of Oscar nods right here.
So would you recommend it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a fantastic character drama. There's a really good message on a couple of different levels of, I'll say, the loss of a loved one. In one, it's, you know, the loss of life, obviously. Then you have, like, the loss of a loved one, but they're still alive.
Yeah.
And then you also have kind of the essentially the endless march of time and kind of the lost opportunities that you've had.
The loss of self, in a sense.
Yeah.
You've missed out on all these things that you could have done, and now you're old.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And it does a fantastic job of tackling all of those in a tactful way that – does have a good emotional core throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think too, the balance it has of like, none of the characters ever get too cynical.
Yeah.
Like they're definitely cynical and they're all three going through, you know, some terrible stuff. But yeah, for me, like, especially if you like Paul Giamatti or if you like, you know, movies from the early 70s, I would definitely recommend it. Yeah. It has that vibe.
Yeah, it does.
You got to go in wanting a good, solid, nuanced character drama.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't going to be a laugh out loud comedy. It's got funny moments. It's not going to have the best, it doesn't have the most satisfying ending in a lot of ways. Like, it's not the most catharsis of a moment, but it, man, it feels so real. It's ridiculous. And I don't know. That may just be me becoming an old man talk here. Like, people are like, oh, yeah, this is what films are like. You know?
Don't be left out alone just in this wilderness of life. come and join us at spoilersintendedpodcast.com, and we can be your found family. You can listen to...
Is this a cult? Are we making a cult?
Don't question it. Leave all your belongings. Come to spoilersintendedpodcast.com.
But on the website, we have links to our Discord, our Patreon, our social media accounts. You should join us.
Yes, join us on Discord. Yeah, we talk about episodes we've reviewed. We talk about things we haven't reviewed. We talk about our hobbies, what we're playing video game-wise, what our pets are doing, what we're cooking. It's a great time. Come check us out on Discord.
You should also join us on Facebook and join us on Instagram. Check it out. We have posts there every week. You know, what's coming out this week, what's coming out for the month, some behind the scenes, some other stuff out there. You should definitely check it out. Follow us. Leave us a like.
And we are not a cult.
That is just what a cult would say.
That's for the lawyers. That's for the lawyers. And that means we are past the spoiler wall. So turn back now if you don't want to be spoiled by about the holdover.
That song has like the perfect vibe of like
super
that,
chill.
That mellow, but I also love that a little song. Melancholy mm-hmm. to it.
That's called Candlepin Bowling.
You have the you have the snow falling around the evergreen trees.
So apparently when they started filming, like they got a snowstorm and they're like, heck yeah, that's probably why it was so cheap to make. Because like, heck yeah, we don't have to make fake snow.
Well, there's something very romantic about, I'll say, like a college campus or a larger, like kind of like boarding school style campus that under the snow.
That insular community where you're separated from the world and then the snow hits. And like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, there's just something. I love that visual.
Every kid that grew up with Harry Potter is just like, yeah.
I can't imagine this movie without that vibe of the snow. So jumping into trivia.
Let's go.
Many of the scenes were filmed at Fairhaven High School in Fairhaven, Massachusetts in February 2022 during the school's February break. At this time, the area received a snowstorm to the delight of the film crew, since many of the scenes took place during a snowstorm.
Yep.
So they took full advantage of the weather, and the snow you see in the film was all from an actual snowstorm. So anytime it's snowing, that's actually happening.
That's awesome. Man.
Yeah. Perfect timing.
Yeah, right? Seriously. You couldn't have asked for a better snowstorm.
And so, you know, we said it earlier, this entire film was shot in real practical locations. No sets or sound stages were used. And a lot of... We've reviewed a few movies that have done that, and I think you can tell the difference a lot of times.
Like, it shows.
It's subtle, but you feel it.
Yeah, I mean, like 1917 is a good example of that.
Well, it's those moments when you can tell that the camera is just like, oh, you can't pan that way because there's nothing over there. It's just like, hey, I can put this anywhere I want.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you have a small crew, like what I'm assuming this did, to where you can have... I don't even say dynamic shots, but just wider, more open kind of experiences.
Well, and you also have kind of the scenes that are lit just by like the ambient light of the scene. You have the bits where Paul is going around with the flashlight, and then later you have Angus going around with the flashlight. Like those scenes, those are great. Like those don't work on a sound. They work so much better in a real location.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we touched a little bit on, you know, the links they went to make it look like it was, you know, in the 70s. So they shot it digitally, but they, in an effort to really, really drill down on the 70s look, cinematographer, I'm going to butcher this name.
Oh yeah, you are.
Iger Brild. he wanted to shoot it on film originally, but because of the specific stock they were looking for, it was just not available. Probably would have been very expensive.
Yeah, I was going to say it would have been very expensive.
Ramped up the budget real fast.
But so he worked extensively with colorist Joe Gawler. And the reason he did is because Joe Gawler is mostly known for film restoration for the Criterion Collection style.
Oh, that's so cool.
So he is an expert in the way film negatives age over time.
Oh, that's what a good pull for a colorist, man.
Yeah, based on his discussions, Brild put together a lookup table to help him color grade the holdovers like an aged film negative from the 70s. Wow. So it looks like it pays off.
A little kind of like muted colors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just everything about, and when I read that, I was like, oh my gosh, the film nerd in me is like, oh. Well,
so that's the kind of look that when I like go out with, you know, a modern digital camera and take a photo and then I apply that look to it, I just feel like such a poser.
I know.
Like, why am I doing this? Like, this is terrible.
That actually does kind of work because, you know, you do have instant photos still now. Like Instax, mini Instax, whatever, like Polaroids, whatever.
Polaroid things.
But those still have that same kind of like, I'm not going to say flat color because they're still very vibrant, but yeah. they have like a certain level of like a, like everything is kind of pushed together.
Yeah.
If mm-hmm. that makes any sense. And like, that's why they're still really popular. I sell Instax on the shop. Like they're great. Yeah.
They have a specific look to mm-hmm. them. It's like, it's but, what people I want. Mean,
that yeah. retro vibe is so hot right now. Yeah. Yeah. It was so hot back then too.
It's still hot.
It never went away. All right, a couple more pieces of trivia, then we'll get into our spoiler-filled thoughts. The effect of Paul Hunnam's lazy eye was achieved with an opaque contact lens.
Yeah, so he was blind in one eye yeah. the whole time he was filming.
So basically, yeah, they it was so convincing that several of Paul Giamatti's childhood friends thought that something was wrong with his eye, like something had happened.
It's like one of the best prosthetics I've ever seen just for like that kind of effect.
Well, yeah.
I read something where like they did it, he initially did it as a gag to... Yeah. Sisa.
Yeah.
I forgot his first name.
And then they loved it so much they just kept it into the script.
As yeah. like, for the longest time, up until like past couple of weeks, they've kept it under wraps yes. of how it actually was done.
So even from Sisa, because he did an interview I saw where he was talking, they were like, how did he go? I don't know. He was like, we would be in a take and his eye is doing that. And then I would go over to craft services and Paul would come up to me and his eye is fine. I don't know what they're doing. And so I thought that was pretty funny that like even on set, they were trying yeah. to keep it, you know,
which is, I think that's really, really cool. I don't know why they wanted to keep it such a secret.
I don't know either.
Having fun with it.
Yeah, having fun with it.
So another, this one's kind of like fun because once you know like the dynamic they mm-hmm. have, Dominic Sisa says he was nervous about hanging out with Paul Giamatti outside of filming.
I could see that.
But he was very nice and easygoing guy with a great sense of humor and said they're both huge fans of animated TV shows and would just watch them during filming breaks together.
Ooh. Oh, did yeah. they say what shows?
Didn't get into what shows.
Andrew's like, I need to know.
I need to know. This is information that must be.
Give it to me.
Paul, come on, Paul. We got to flex
for you. Is it Cardcaptor Sakura? It's got to be Paul Giamatti's a huge Cardcaptor Sakura.
They're over there watching Pounded Out Neo Genesis Evangelion.
I mean, that's fine too.
So last piece of trivia here. Divine Joy Randolph, a non-smoker, found that smoking fake cigarettes looked unrealistic. So she opted to smoke real cigarettes on screen for the role while being very sensitive to not becoming addicted to nicotine. So she decided on American Spirit as the brand that she disliked the most and could quit as easily as possible after filming Wrapped.
That's incredible, actually. So,
sorry, American Spirit, you have a rot gut cigarettes.
The effect of smoking on screen was so good that while we were watching this, my wife was like, they're not using fake cigarettes. That's a real cigarette.
That's a real cigarette.
Yeah. And like it, again, we're going for, hey, this is the 70s.
Yeah.
You know, it's ashtrays, what it was. Ashtrays on the table in the restaurant.
Yep. Oh,
I'm smoking between bites, you know?
Yeah. It was honestly like the commit to the bit.
Right.
Was impressive all the way around.
Across the board.
Yeah. And when I say like, I love this movie, I would never say this is like one of my favorite movies of all time, but I love this movie because it literally set out to do exactly what it did.
It knew what it wanted to be. And when it got there, it wallowed in it.
And it committed. Yeah. So, because it also, even in the dialogue, the mm-hmm. editing, the lighting, the film look,
the costuming, the cars, everything, the
pace of the movie is a little slower because mm-hmm. like the 70s dramas and you know, things
they
from that era,
a little slow.
They took their time with stuff. This is before we had to have, and like some of the 1-star reviews I didn't pick, we're like, man, this movie takes forever to get going. The opening credits are like 8 minutes long. And it's like, that's just what movies were.
That's just what they were. You know, you had an overture and you ADHD watched all Zoomers, the credits. Yeah.
Man, I tell you.
Yeah. So what did you
Facebook
guys think?
Facebook has ruined children.
Yeah, it really has.
You left out one of my favorite pieces of trivia.
I had more. I just didn't want to like continue to waller in it.
Well, but again, we're talking about like
this is spoilers trivia intended.
Yes. STI.
What's your favorite part?
Well, so kind of weighing in on that commitment to the 70s and like the mm-hmm. difference in eras, right? So for us, this seems totally natural to dial a rotary phone.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I have that one in here.
But Dominic failed the first take when he calls home trying to reach his mom because he walked up to the telephone and was just like, what do I do with this thing?
Yeah.
So they had to like sit him down and teach him how it works.
That's
so
he incredible.
Could actually dial the
As
phone.
A true teenager in 2022, he'd be like, I don't even...
What am I supposed to do?
Which end of this is the phone?
Because for us growing up, you know, the films we were watching, they all had rotary
phones.
My
grandmother had a rotary phone.
We had a rotary phone.
Yeah, we had rotary phones too.
5 years ago, I would still use that thing. It was so satisfying to hang up on somebody. It was metal. And it was in a concrete wall in the basement.
Oh, man. Yeah, you slam that thing.
If a bomb went off, that phone would still be there. The house would be in shambles.
Fallout 6, you're in there putting in a bottle cap to dial on it.
Like, you know, in older films, whenever someone has to defend themselves, they'll hit someone with the phone.
Oh, and that's a viable.
Oh, yeah, that's like, it's attempted murder.
What are you doing?
But yeah, the feeling of the rotary, that the clack, clack.
Yeah,
so good. Okay, so to the emotional climaxes of this movie, right, where he gets to the twist that his father's not dead.
Yeah.
He's in a, you know.
A mental hospital.
Sanitarium.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really see that coming. Like, when he snuck away, I kept thinking, what's he, from the movies.
What's he trying to do?
I was like, what's he trying to do? Is he trying to ditch this guy?
Yeah, because at this point, you're like, well, I don't think he's trying to ditch him to ditch him.
Right,
yeah. Because, like, they're having, like, I'll say a good time, good enough as you can.
It had developed to them having a good time.
When that happened, I was like, oh, come on now, film. Don't revert back here. Like, we moved past this point.
Because whenever he was leaving the movie theater, I was like, oh, come on, don't revert.
Yeah.
Like,
but he didn't, which I'm very glad that's the way the script went. But, yeah, like, then the scene with, you know, his dad, and he's telling him, and his dad, like, leans in, and that heartbreaking moment of just,
holds his hands, like, it's going to be, like, this big heart-to-heart moment. Like,
yeah, and
I
just
think they're putting stuff in my food.
Yeah. And that's definitely probably the most emotional part of the film.
So for me, the most emotional part was when Mary has the breakdown at the party.
When he closes the door to the kitchen,
It hit me hard because it was like, I think I had this fleeting, I'm talking like millisecond response of like, what's her deal?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is the first Christmas without her son.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the timeline of events and the context caught up to me quick.
Piled up on her and just comes crashing down.
And when it did, it hit me. I was tearing up. I was like, oh no, her baby. You know, and then like they're standing around and they're like trying to help. But then like, that whole scene, I was like, Divine was doing some work in that scene.
Oh, she was. Yeah. She was doing some hard work.
Well, and then,
there.
You know, and it shows a paramount to her character in the film is that, you know, the second that they get out of the thing, she has a little bit of a minute to kind of recuperate.
Yeah.
Then she's back to, you know, her strong self and, you know, kind of pushing them around.
Well, she puts
Paul in his place.
Also, there's a line there where Angus says something and Paul snaps back at him and then she just like comes down on Paul.
Yeah.
He basically acts like he doesn't want the kid around.
Yeah.
And she's like, you don't tell a kid
on Christmas Eve
who lost his father,
yeah.
doesn't have anywhere to go on Christmas Eve, that you don't want him around.
Yeah,
what is wrong with you? Mm-hmm. She used colorful language that I can't
use. That we don't use on the podcast. So I really liked, speaking of the party scene, I really liked it just because of it's the microcosm of their three kind of parallel stories.
Yes.
Where for Mary, right, we're ignoring the emotional issue she has currently with the loss of her son. But in terms of if she wants a relationship, Danny's there, but she's not ready for
she's
it.
She's not ready. Yeah.
Paul is starting to think maybe I'm interested in, and then it turns out, hey, the girl I was looking at.
Oh, that was such a bad rug pull. I was so mad at that girl.
Miss Lydia Crane.
She's just very nice. She's taken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas you have Angus, where Angus is like, hey, like I could go somewhere with this girl.
Yeah.
But I thought that whole sequence at the party where it's very much so like a three different outlooks on life, a three different points in their lives of like what do they expect? What is going to happen in terms of relationships? Because I did kind of wonder, like, you know, I'm rooting for Paul with Lydia here, but like if that happens, like this gets very kind of trite.
It does.
And almost predictable.
It does, yeah.
So I think swerving away from some of those, you know,
the common tropes.
Story building blocks that you would expect makes this a more unique film.
Mm-hmm. But also, like, and I think this is where, you know, the discussion goes further of like, if it had done some more of those tropey style things, but done them slightly differently, I think it would have veered closer to like a Good Will Hunting, where like you have that catharsis.
Well, that's the other
satisfying
thing.
Arc.
You don't get the catharsis because you don't get that kind of payoff. Like you get a form of payoff, but it's a very open ended.
Yeah. Well, and the payoff at the end of the film is really good. Like you do get a little bit of him telling off his older student that is now the dean of the bar.
My favorite line in the movie. He says to Dean Woodrup, I've known you my entire life. You have always been and will continue to be penis cancer in human form.
Yeah.
And then he just walks out. Just,
yeah.
I was like, yes.
And that's kind of one of those moments in the film where you're like, you know, he's getting fired for this. He's nothing to lose now.
He's already gone.
And
yeah.
And I was kind of like, well, that's kind of a downer ending. And then I realized that, you know, when he was packing up and he was like, well, I'm just going to start in, you know, X, you know, country
Carthage,
or, yeah,
yeah.
And then
yeah, Carthage.
Just go. And I'm like, there we go. This is what I want out of this character.
It's
because
literally this school has almost been holding him back.
Yeah.
You know, from doing like what he needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and his general mentality is because every single opportunity that he had, he always inserted some form of ancient history or something like that. You're like, come on, dude, like this is your thing. Go to the places that you're talking about.
Yeah. But then even Mary gets a really good happy ending. You get to see her reconnect with her sister and she brings that box and you're like, what's in this box? And it's her like, son's
all the baby stuff.
She's giving it to her sister.
That was actually a pretty emotional
moment. I love that when they drop her off at her sister's and they get her in, that the door didn't just close and then later
get some cutaways.
We don't just see her show up later and she's like, oh, you know, I had a great visit.
Yeah.
Like what a cop out, right?
Oh, right.
The bit where the two of them are sitting on the couch, like jawing away at each other, and her sister's husband walks by and kind of rolls his eyes and keeps going. It's like, this is perfect. This is just like two sisters just having their time, you know?
That was also one of my favorite long cross-dissolve transitions because it goes from the same room at a different angle to that same room later that night. And it's showing that time has passed and they're still catching up. And the subtlety of the husband is looking in and being like, still talking. but then at the end, when she's talking about the college fund for her nephew, it's like, I just love that her arc gets as satisfying of an ending as both Angus and Paul's.
And that, like, her sister's putting, you know, Curtis's the baby's middle name.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If it was a boy.
If it's a boy.
Right.
Well, it's the 70s. You don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even with Angus, like, as bittersweet as it is that his actions got Paul fired. I keep wanting to be like, what's his character name? Because it can't be Paul.
No, that's what
it can't be Paul. Got Paul fired, but it's still like, Angus as a person grew so much over this experience.
Obviously that's the whole point of Paul's arc is that he's willing to fall on his sword for just a kid, not his kid. Not, you know, it's just a kid that he happened to connect with. He sees the potential in him.
He falls on the sword for his student.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sure.
That's close to it. It's not just some random kid on a sidewalk.
No,
right?
Close
to it. Like, there's more of a relationship.
But
there.
I mean, as far as he was concerned at the beginning of the film, it was just a student, like just a kid.
Oh, man, he was the star student of that class, the only B on
only
the paper.
On
the, when those papers are coming down, man, I had some teachers like that in high school who'd just be like, there is no curve. The curve is.
You fail.
If you fail, you fail. Swim or die.
And then one kid's like, I can't fail this. Oh, don't sell yourself short. I think you absolutely can fail this.
Those lines were so good.
So I think my favorite Paul tirade, though, was when they're at the restaurant at the end in Boston. And he goes on this fascist tirade about the
Cherry's Jubilee.
Because it has bourbon
well,
in
I'll
it.
I'll just order it. I can't do that. Okay. And then they get it all to go and they set it on fire in the parking lot and it falls off the back of the car.
That whole little bit is such a good little moment of the good intentions obviously there.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, well, we don't know what we're doing.
How much did you put on that?
Mary's bit where she's like, well, you have cherries, right? Yes. You have ice cream, right? Yes. Good. We'll take cherries and ice cream to go, please. And then she walks through and she's like, that.
There's some really good one-liners in this film.
Oh, man.
Yeah. To me, you know, talking about like the big emotional pops, you know, and like bawling your eyes out stuff, I feel like it's like 1,000 tiny moments.
Yeah. Like, well, so like even we haven't even talked about any of the students that get held over, but then they get the helicopter.
So all those kids were great too. And I think,
so I was actually almost a little disappointed because like again, the trailer doesn't give you a whole lot of idea. Like you're pretty certain it's going to be Paul and Angus.
And I was like, oh, we're going to have like a group.
Oh, we're going to have like a group here.
Yeah.
And like there were some good interactions with Angus and the Mormon kid whose name I forget. And then
his name is Alex.
And then the Korean kid when he like
Ijun Park.
Park. I knew his last name was Park. Yeah. But like when he like wakes up in the middle of the night, like there's a good moment there with him and Angus where it was like
Angus isn't a bad kid.
That's one of your earliest looks at the fact that he's genuinely not a bad kid.
Mm-hmm. He's just he's very cynical and he has a very heavy wall up in front of him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, of past trauma with his dad and his mom.
You see his terrible mom and stepdad later and you're like, no wonder the kid's got walls
right?
up.
Jeez.
But like then the like kind of the scuffle between him and his classmate, I can't remember Rocky.
Koontz.
Koontz.
It's real close to something else.
Well, that kid needs to be punched in the face. But
that kid's way too short to be bowing up to Angus like
well,
that.
No, that's the thing, though. I mean, like, that's kind of one of those interactions where, like, I had a frenemy when I was in high school that was very similar to where he was shorter than I was, and I was just, you know, a tall kid. And, like, we were essentially in the same friends group and stuff, but we never really got along in any kind of form or fashion. And we never came to blows or anything, but it's definitely one of those where, like, if we wanted to, we knew ways to get under each other's skin in the most annoying possible way ever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it's always a back and forth.
Yeah. I mean, I think they nailed that. Mm-hmm. And to your point, like I was almost a little disappointed too when they whisked the other kids away to the ski trip to the quarterback kid. I can't think of his name.
Well, I liked him. I liked him too. Where he's like, so like, why are you a holder? Oh, because I won't cut my hair. Like, what?
What?
Yeah, it's a contest of wills between me and my dad. Yeah.
And then you see him at the end with the shaved head.
Well, I just love when the phone rings and like he lifts his chin up as the or no when the chopper flies he lifts his chin up. He's like, softy. Man, like this is such a cool relationship here. And then of course we don't.
We don't see it.
Yeah.
But I am glad that they remove every other element and
drill down on the three what we get as the three main characters
and it does such a good job at that early section when everyone's there is building up all three of these other characters and their general stance of where they stand with other people and then you put them all three together just by themselves and it turns into a whole different dynamic.
Oh, yeah. one of my favorite Paul Goff moments is when Koontz is like complaining about her cooking and he just slams
it down.
I was like, yes.
You tell that snot-nosed kid.
I know. Say more. Make it feel worse.
Yep.
But then she tells him later, I hear everything. Yeah. You know? And I was like, oh, okay. She knows he's like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so would you rewatch it?
Absolutely. I don't know if I'd rewatch it like any soon, maybe in a couple years.
Yeah.
But because it's just an emotional film. Like I don't watch Good Will Hunting every
year. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's not a pop it on anytime. I would rewatch it so my wife and I, you know, I was telling her we were gonna watch it for the review and I showed her the trailer. Mm-hmm. And like the night we were gonna watch it, she had to get up super early the next day, so she went to bed. But if she wanted to rewatch it like this weekend or next week, I would rewatch it with her, no problem. Like it would not be like I just saw it.
Yeah.
But if I'm on my own, I would probably, every couple years.
Every couple years.
Yeah. There are some people that are saying this is going to be like in their Christmas movie rotation because,
I mean,
for us, we're watching it now. It takes
place over Christmas.
Yeah. And it takes place over Christmas and it came out around October. But director, what's his name? Alexander Payne. Yep.
Paul Alexander
hates this. He's like, this is not a Christmas movie.
This is not a feel good Christmas movie.
It's not supposed to be this. And people are like, you can't tell me how to feel about your movie. What about you, Steven? Would you rewatch it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of in the same boat with y'all. You know, when you're in the right mood for this aesthetic or this vibe, I think this film's going to hit real well.
Yeah. A good character driven story.
Well, and just it's the aesthetic and the mood. I will say the soundtrack is
killer.
Definitely going to make it into a listing rotation for me.
For sure.
There are some killer songs on that soundtrack.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about our Patreon.
For just $1.
$1.
This is the
Why did you say it like that?
$1.
$1.
It's 1970. $1 will buy you a whole chicken.
is it a Costco chicken?
Costco.
It's a live chicken.
Probably not.
But for $1, this is the most direct way you can support the show. If you love what you're hearing here and you want to help us pay hosting fees, keep the lights on, this is the best way to do it. And what you get in return is a whole lot for just a dollar. dollar or more. You can always support with more.
Yeah.
So we have a whole library of bonus episodes and commentaries and Patreon picks polls that you can do. But the bonus episodes are honestly my favorite part. Yeah. We fight presidents. We talk to ChatGPT to give us relationship advice. It's never a good idea.
No, we gave ChatGPT relationship advice.
Well, in March,
also,
right
not
now,
a good idea.
In March, we have the March Madness at the movies bracket where we basically took any movie that came out in March. Well, a lot of movies that came out in March. We seeded a bracket and then
we just hashed it out.
Put them head to head. There are some wild matchups.
There are some wild matchups because a lot of varying movies have come out in March. Okay, but that sounds about like all the time we have. So as always, follow us on social, leave us a review wherever you're listening now, and share us with a friend. Until next time, I'm Ryan.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Steven.
And every spoiler was intended.